sober.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hey there.
And welcome to series two of Meet at the Hotel Bar. After being tangled up in tabloid dramas, hitting the podcast charts, and unearthing some of the best kept touring stories you will ever hear, we are back again, bigger and better. Who knew that was even possible?
I did. If you are new here, we are Freddie, JC and Huss from the band Floors, a three-piece indie pop band from London via Huddersfield. Since we started touring and travelling the globe, we realise there are so many funny things that happen on and off stage. So many stories that never get shared with the rest of the world. They just stay in the dressing rooms and the tour buses of the bands and artists you love.
Until now. In this podcast, we're lifting the lid on life on the road. And where better to meet up and tell those touring tales than a place every touring musician knows probably too well, the trusty hotel bar.
And why is it so busty?
Said trusty. It's just very trustworthy. It's you can't go wrong. You'll never get let down by a hotel bar. They're open.
Till late.
24/7.
Not quite 24/7. It depends where you're at.
In today's episode, we speak with Irish pop sensations Picture This in a hotel bar in Camden the morning after their sold-out headline show at Coco. And in a Meet at the Hotel Bar first, we had not one, but two members of the band, Jimmy and Ryan. The band's debut album went triple platinum and went to number one on Ireland's overall chart for 4 weeks. Since then, all of their three albums have reached number one on the Irish charts. The band have over 450 million total streams, have sold out stadiums, including a five-night stand at Dublin's Three Arena, and have headlined Electric Picnic's main stage.
We've been fans of Picture This for a while now, so it was a real pleasure to have them on the podcast.
Stay tuned to hear stories of how they went to number one in 15 minutes after an unplanned radio performance, on-stage injuries, and how it feels to have 70,000 people singing an unreleased song back at you. After ordering a round of Guinness, we were ready to go.
This is Picture This, coming up on Meet at the Hotel Bar.
Westlife members have gone together. Boys life.
And is it the guy from... I don't know about this. I watched Loose Women the other day.
You seem quite knowledgeable.
Are you talking about Ronan Keating?
No, it was the guy from... it was in... Coronation Street, Kieran.
Oh, Keith Duffy.
Yeah, Keith Duffy.
Yeah, that's it. He's one half of Boys Life. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Legendary. They've got some tunes, though, to be fair. They did like a little medley.
They do. Some banging tunes.
So, please welcome Picture This. This is Jimmy and Ryan. Thanks for coming and joining the podcast, family.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
So, let's get straight into it. So you've literally just finished a European tour.
Yes.
And last night was the last show of the tour?
Yeah.
Of that tour.
Correct.
How was it? How was the tour?
It was amazing. It was, we haven't played since like last September was the last show we played. So it's been like a few months. And it's always that weird thing when you don't play for a while where you don't know how it's going to go. You're kind of, you don't know whether you're going to remember how to play.
Yeah.
But it was amazing. From the word go, we started off in Amsterdam, went through Germany, Brussels, sick. Paris, London. And it was amazing. Just felt so good to be back on the road and back doing it. It was like an underplay tour, so it was all like intimate venues. And
cool.
Just a great vibe around Europe. It was really good.
Do you have a favourite city out of the ones?
Cologne was incredible. That show was amazing. Just the German fans are just so respectful and like super attentive, and you couldn't hear a pin drop in the room at the right moments, you know. So that was amazing, and it's a great city. Germany in general, we love Germany.
We're literally on the same boat there.
Really,
Germany
yeah.
is. We say this, and we've probably said this already on the podcast, but Germany is the one. Like we just did a tour supporting Tom Grennan across Germany and right. Europe, and. Literally, like, you get to the venue and, like, obviously as a support act, you're not thinking it's going to be, like, a full room, you know, people are talking, but literally you get there, full room, and everyone is there, just ready.
Yeah.
Almost being, like, you know, show us what you're worth.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Prove us wrong sort of a thing. Like, you know, they give you a chance, which is, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. They're amazing. There from doors, like, packed. Yeah, it's
yeah.
They're amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's so sick. We love going back to there. And Cologne's always a fun one.
Was it
Cologne? That we had a little incident.
Oh yeah, so on that same tour that JC just mentioned. In fact, we should make a quick disclaimer. There are three of us in Floors, but Huss, our drummer, he can't be here. He's moving to the coast and he's snowed under with movable vans.
He sends his apologies.
But so we were in Cologne and we were having, up until this point, the perfect day off. So There was an amazing like thermal spa.
Yeah, you should go to the thermal spa next time you're Cologne.
Definitely recommend. Like, I think we recommend it. Yeah.
It's called like Claudius Thermi. Claudius Thermi. It's probably exactly how you pronounce it, I think.
I'll remember that.
So we were full of a nice lunch. We'd been out for lunch. Went to this place, and anyway, Huss is like severely allergic to nuts. Like he would die if he ate one. And after our spa, we thought, oh, let's go up to the bar. Let's go to the restaurant and treat ourselves to an ice cream, make it the perfect day.
Yeah.
And Huss has got a soft spot for strudel. And he orders a strudel. Having checked like three times, is it nut-free? And they said it was.
Right.
Turns out he was spitting out nuts.
Oh, my God.
It's quite a bizarre story, actually. Yeah. And so we realize he's having a potential nuts reaction here. He gets up to leave to go to get his EpiPen, and then this lady that's walking towards us just faints, like no warning. She just faints.
Literally, you couldn't make it up.
And that and blocks like, the pathway.
We were on like a balcony that overlooked like this spa. So there's obviously all these like different like temperature pools. There's like hot pools and cold pools and plunge pools and like whirlpools and stuff. And then we were up on this like balcony, and it's quite a thin like balcony, and there was no way to go past. And then this doctor just appeared from nowhere. Like literally he was stood there and was just like, said to Huss, like, hold her legs. And of course, like, Huss is potentially dying. And we're just like, what is life?
Wow.
What is going on?
Wow. That is crazy.
That is not why he's not here today.
Yeah, that's thankfully. He made it
through. Still recovering.
And anyway, he was fine.
And we got the day free as well.
Exactly. But no, Cologne is definitely where it's at.
Yeah.
And also I saw on your Instagram, you've been writing a song in every city. Now we can say firsthand on tour, like from all like the touring and the, you know, the traveling, it's fucking tiring. Like props for doing that. Like that's so like, yeah, I was fucking impressed anyway. And we absolutely appreciate the hustle. How did that work? How like,
there was a couple, we actually had a song called Amsterdam that we had just written a few weeks ago. So that was an easy one.
Okay.
And then we started in Amsterdam. So that one was good. We had that one. And then when I was waiting to be picked up to go to the airport to go on tour, I had the idea of maybe I'll write one for the other cities. So I wrote two that morning for Berlin and Cologne.
Sick.
And then just every time we got to a city, then I was just writing one. They were just like minute long kind of, almost like jingles for each city.
Yeah.
So it wasn't too strenuous. And then I would send Jimmy the voice note, and then Jimmy would make the track.
Yeah,
and then
I would have like my recording equipment with me on the tour, and I would make a little track. It was stressful at times because...
More stressful for you, I think. Yeah.
You know how little time you have in an afternoon. You know, you have to eat, you have to sound check, do all
That's
these
the
things.
Thing.
Yeah, but it was fine.
Seeing all these like songs coming out, and it's like we're in Cologne. How have you managed to write this song?
Yeah.
You were in fucking Amsterdam last night.
There was one actually. I was steaming because we were sick, or I was sick for the whole tour. I had like a cold, but I wrote the one about Brussels as I was steaming, like as I had my head in a basin with a towel over my head. I just wrote the one for Brussels. So that's you're trying to find time anywhere.
Yeah,
and that was where I found time for Brussels. Yeah.
I thought you meant you were steaming as if you were your face.
No,
well, I was steaming.
That few nights too, but yeah.
And so you played the songs in each city that same night? Or was it just for socials?
It was stuff? Just for socials, yeah. I actually planned on us playing it, but then it just kind of didn't happen. Because I remember
I reckon that'd go down really well.
I think it would, like, yeah. Because some of them were like kind of... Like the one about Cologne was me saying that I'll be on stage tonight saying hello Cologne. Oh, so okay. We should have played that one. But maybe next time.
And do you have like a setup on the bus, or is it like you have like in the dressing room?
Just my laptop really, and I have like a little MIDI keyboard that it just
works
fine.
Really, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's it now.
It's fine, and I try to keep the songs as simple as possible in terms of production. I didn't want to try and produce a full track or anything, so I just kept it simple with some guitar and bits and pieces because that's all it needs. And it was fun. It's a good exercise to do, you know. Kept us busy. It passed the time.
Yeah,
I was going to say. So, do you typically produce most of the stuff for the band, or how does that work?
Yes.
Somebody produces it all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
So it's something I try and do is usually try and bring a setup on tour because there is time. But to be honest, most times you're just too tired to be going in to record or write music on tour. I'm just personally, I'm not in that mind frame. but I always have it there just in case.
Yeah, you just gotta be so disciplined. I saw Phineas does it. He's got like a big flight case, like a huge flight case, and he basically has like a room. And he basically, so each city goes to a different place, and he basically just opens up this suitcase, this flight case, and it's like his desk, and everything's set up.
I would love that. I think that would be class to have. Yeah. Like, I think if we could get to the point where I could do that, I think I would use it.
But even
you'd be more inclined to use it if you have a.
I think
that's the thing. Yeah, the guilt of like taking up a whole room.
Yeah,
That's another thing. Actually,
I know Ryan Tedder has like a trailer on the back of his tour bus with One Republic, so he goes into that trailer and has a studio set up, and just like as they're driving, he's working in that, which is pretty cool.
Yeah,
cool.
The discipline though, it's like I remember we did it. So I used to be we all used to be like session musicians.
Right.
So we used to play for like different pop artists and stuff. I remember a tour. I was on in America, and I remember being in this like mindset that was like, right, I'm starting like a project. I was like, I need to be like so disciplined. I'm writing every day, and basically became a hermit and was like on the tour bus, and I had my little setup, and like before soundcheck, I'd be like there, like after the show, I'd be there, like. And I remember one day we were in. Where we were somewhere, and the guys were like, oh, we're going to this like amphitheater today, we're like, you know, we're going off to this place. And I was like, oh cool, like have a great day. And I'm like working away on a song, and then I look on my Instagram and they've gone to like Red Rocks.
Oh, right.
And they're like walking around like, and they send all these like photos being like, oh, it's amazing, you should have come. And I was just like, fuck, I was like, I didn't say it was Red Rocks. Yeah. I was like, you just said it was like some random amphitheater, and I'm just like there on the bus. But yeah, no, it's not about the hustle.
It's find the balance too, so you can go and enjoy those things. Mm. For sure.
Cool. So taking it back to the start, what are your first memories from the first ever tour, or the early days of you guys?
We did an Irish tour. It was our first ever tour. And do you know what? Something that sticks with me is in each venue we went to, I know for me anyway, I wasn't aware of the kind of wave that we were about to have, particularly in Ireland. I was just kind of naive because I was so fresh to music. It was my first time playing shows and stuff. But I remember a lot of the venue managers saying to us, enjoy this, you're never going to play a room this size again.
And they said that to you?
Yeah, like four or five of them on the tour. And I remember not understanding it at the time and being like, I don't really get what he means. And then I remember our manager being like, you're not going to play these rooms again. Like the band is taking off.
Oh, in that way? Yeah, I read it the other way.
Yeah, no. Because I was confused. Yeah. I was confused by it as well. I was a bit like, I didn't really get it. And then I was like,
cool.
Oh, it was like awesome. A moment of like, oh, there's something happening here. And I remember that being a time of like,
let's redo that bit, and I'll give it a different reaction. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, give a really good one. But that's something that I always think of. Do you have anything?
I just remember it being very. It was very new. It was like for me personally. I was a session musician as well, and I just had been in the world for a long time, and then all of a sudden. It was even though we were playing like small little bars, kind of, it all of a sudden felt different, and it felt like having your own project and doing your own thing has such a different energy. And
absolutely,
I think it's a thing for all musicians that sometimes people, especially if they're a session musician, they're kind of in a certain world and they think they know how the music industry is. But I think not until you have ownership over what you do and you're being creative and people are responding to your creativeness, do you feel the real music industry, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's what I remember mostly from that point. Because to be honest, I was kind of sick of the music industry from being a session musician, and I was burnt out. But it just gave me new life, and now I love it.
Yeah, no, yeah. I totally relate. I think there was always a sense of being like replaced, like so easily, like you know, if I make a mistake, but like I just felt that my job was always on the line, and obviously there was a million people that wanted that position, you know, playing keys for whatever artist, like that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. It's a crazy old world. You know,
it is. Yeah, it's tough, and it's a very, as you guys know, it's such a tough industry. And from that, talking about that tour, I personally anyway felt like very lucky that I got out of, being a session musician and was able to do it now. And I just felt lucky in general that it was being successful, because success is a very rare word in music. You know, it's, you can be successful in a lot of different ways, but to actually be successful on a commercial level is just so rare. So very, very lucky. Yeah. Yeah,
there's also that wake up call as well, isn't there? When you're used to like someone setting all your equipment up and literally just turning up and playing, and then all of a sudden you're back being like, "Oh shit, how do I even set up my keyboard?" Just like, you know, having
the keyboard still sat on the floor and it's not moved.
not having a dressing room. We've done shows where we've like literally been in like the little bit, you know, by the side of the stage where it's like, that's your dressing room. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. Know that feeling.
Yeah. And the rickety old splitter van, you know, that's
Speaking of vans, what is the best travel day that you guys have ever had? Do any memories spring to mind? Or day off, just anything in between shows whilst being on tour.
But before we actually get into that, speaking of vans also, is on that tour we drove Jimmy's parents, where our guitarist Owen drove Jimmy's parents own like a printing company in our hometown. So we drove their van around on that whole tour.
And I guess it's like free promo for them as well.
Do you know what? It was actually funny, because it's a local business in our town. And I remember hearing that there was people that traveled from Italy to come and see us playing in Manchester, and they walked by the van. And they were like, "Oh, there's a data print in Manchester as well." They were like, "Oh, I didn't know it was like a global." It's like, "No, it's just the van. It's the van from the town.
It's the van.
In terms of travel days, we did actually a great trip in the summer of 21?
Yes.
Summer of 2021, where it was kind of the start of the process for this album that's going to come out in September. Where we just went, the four of us in the band got in a Jeep and just drove around Europe for 3 weeks with no plans. Mm. Jimmy would book accommodation as on the fly. We didn't know where we were going to go. We had nothing booked.
Yeah, we had no travel plans. We literally got the Eurostar to Calais and then just drove in any direction and just would just drive until we had to stop. And we actually ended up going all the way to Rome. We drove all the way to Rome and back, and that was a crazy, crazy time. Just the real feeling of freedom that I guess as a band we don't usually get to feel when you're on a day off, even, or on a tour, you're very scheduled. Yeah. So just to be the four of us just driving in the summer through Europe, no plans, everything worked out fine, but yeah, we had some crazy times.
Yeah, it was interesting. Like the first night we slept on the floor of a yoga studio in Switzerland, which was just
I booked an Airbnb. I thought it was an Airbnb and it was a yoga studio. And we showed up and it was like 2,000 meters up in the Alps. And it was rough.
Yeah, there was lots of floor. That stuff, but it made it really interesting. Trying to check into Airbnbs in like the middle of nowhere, Italy, and they have no English whatsoever. And we're trying to be like, "Where's the key?" And they're just speaking back in Italian. They're like, "Okay, we'll just figure it out." There was a lot of that, but that was an amazing trip.
I love the spontaneity. Cool,
yeah, it's like it's testament to the fact that you guys are close as well. There's no tension between you and your friends.
We're lucky, I think.
Yeah, we are very close. We're all very different people as well, which I think helps. Yeah, and we all have very different lives, but it just works, and it's fun. It was actually good to do because it set up our year. You know, even till now, we still talk about that trip as, you know, I'd recommend it.
And was it like, were you doing any, were you writing on the trip, or was it literally just like...
It wasn't for that reason, but...
It wasn't fair,
happens.
I write a lot, like constantly. I can't really stop. So it's just like there was stuff, but that wasn't the intention. But there was, I don't think there was anything that made it to the album though.
No, I don't think so.
But it was that kind of start of the writing process for the album, yeah.
I'm sick. Yeah.
You should do it.
Yeah, no, I love the idea. Yeah. This is literally on my bucket list of things to do. It's like that thing of like going to the airport with your bags packed and then literally going and looking at the board and then the one that's on the top, or saying a number, it'd be like number 8. Yeah. And then being like, "Right, we're going to Dusseldorf." Or, you know what I mean?
that kind of
thing. And then literally just buying the tickets and going and doing it.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It's
kind of similar
really
thing.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. You should do it.
It's kind of like you can't get lost because your intention is to not follow a route.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And the people you end up meeting and the things you end up doing are just, you always remember it.
Totally.
So the beauty of live gigs is that not everything always goes according to plan. What is the worst thing that has happened to you guys on stage? What comes to mind?
We've been really lucky, haven't we?
We've had some stuff happen to us. Our Cliff, our bass player, the other night in Brussels, which was the show before London, his foot got caught on one of my mic cables, and the whole one half of my drum kit went with Cliff and fell off the riser and exploded basically onto the ground. That was recently enough. That was quite bad.
How do you style that out?
Well, like I didn't see it, weirdly, because I was looking to my right and the left side of the kit. So I heard it. I heard an explosion in my ears. I was like, whoa. So much so that our guitarist... for some reason, skipped 8 bars in his head out of chuck and ended up being 8 bars ahead of everyone else.
Just that shredding.
Yeah. And then was looking at us being like, what are we doing? Yeah. It was so confusing. So everyone on stage was a bit mental. But nothing really, bad has happened, has it?
Yeah, we headlined the Electric Picnic, which is like the big festival in Ireland, in September, and I sprained my ankle at that show
on stage.
I jumped down and was like running through the pit, and it had been raining all day, and then the surface was really slippy, so I was sprinting like full force, and I slipped and banged my ankle off the barrier, and I sprained like this finger as well, so I was like really badly injured. But I just hit the ground, security picked me back up, stayed running, got back on stage, and I didn't feel anything.
I was going to say, surely the adrenaline was...
Oh yeah,
was
like we were playing to 70,000 people, it was fucking crazy.
Wow, that's awesome.
And then, I didn't feel a thing, and then we got backstage, and I was like, oh, my ankle really hurts. And I remember you actually ran and got me ice, and I had to ice up, but I was like, I had to go and get an x-ray and everything, but... That was a big mishap.
Did you have time off after that to recoup, or was it?
Yeah, we did. Thankfully, that was like our final thing of the year, so I was lucky.
Yeah. And what about you guys? I feel like this question comes from some kind
it's
of
a loaded trauma. Question. I actually thought of one that that I don't think we've mentioned. Not a Flaws one, like a previous one. So I used to play for an artist called Ella Rare, and we played a show once. I guess I'm just dobbing her in here, but she wasn't miming, but the rest of the band were all miming. So she was singing live, and the BVs were singing live. It was like one of those like radio things where it's like, there's no time in between the
changeovers.
It was like, like a 5 minute changeover. If that, it was literally just like spinning around. It was like, go, you're on. So we were like miming away. And my keyboard, like, the stand collapsed literally like mid song, and it's I think it was like a key, like where it was literally like a, might even be like a ballad where it was like a piano and vocal, and obviously the piano like keeps going, and like literally like the keyboard's on the floor, like it's falling down, and I'm like, God. Shit, like what? And I'm literally like trying to like style it out, like all of the cables are all gone, like everything's gone, and I'm like playing, and then luckily like our tech like came running round like set it up, and it was only like in the time it feels like half an hour that really it was probably only about 20 seconds.
Yeah.
But
that's why you need a keto.
I had the keto then.
The thing that I've started to notice recently is that I've switched to digital guitar pedals and amps, and I've not been running an amp on stage, and so if you ever lose your in-ears, because I haven't got molds, I've just got generic earplugs.
All right.
If they ever come out,
you're gone.
You think the guitar has stopped working. Yeah. I've had it where I've been frantically trying to figure out why my guitar has stopped, like resetting the pedal board, when really it's just the fact that I can't hear it.
It's risky business.
I had that the other day with the acoustic.
Oh, really?
No, at the headline show, I just didn't plug it in.
I plugged it in for you mid-song.
Really?
Basically, I'm not a guitarist. Basically, it was this thing of like, I feel like whenever I meet anyone or whatever, everyone like assumes, because I'm like a singer and a keyboard player, they assume that I can play the guitar as well. Yeah. And I just haven't. And then through lockdown, I made it sort of like my mission to learn the guitar. Mm-hmm. So like Freddie would give me like Zoom like lessons to learn the guitar. And then, so now I've started playing like one song, couple songs in the set.
Right.
But I've still not mastered the whole, playing guitar on stage and literally got it up, got this whole spiel about, learning the guitar, blah, 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 blah. And like went into the song, and then only in like, I think it was like second verse did I realize.
Because we were heading for a section where it's just JC and acoustic, and I was like, I have to get him plugged in ahead of that. Sacrifice
my
part.
I was like, I was in the moment. I was loving it. And then you were like, boom, and I was like, oh shit. And obviously everyone laughs because like, almost, I feel like no one in the crowd noticed. I feel like it was probably that. Not, I feel like you outed me.
Sorry.
I actually did the opposite last night. I always fuck with our bass player during one particular song.
Oh, really?
Because he has like a part in it where it's just bass, and I ran over to him and plugged his bass out last night, and I could just see him looking like, what the fuck is going on? So yeah. I did the opposite.
Have you seen him try to plug up? Him trying to plug that back in, really? Was just like, oh my God. Yeah, very funny.
What would you consider to be like your career highlight? If you were to meet someone in a bar and they'd be like, oh, what's the coolest thing you've ever done? Again, you mentioned about the Electric Picnic.
Yeah.
And I actually watched one of the videos on YouTube.
Right.
And
yeah.
You mentioned about it being, you said something like, that's the best feeling that my body's ever had, or yes, something like that.
Yeah, I remember that. It was at the end of, because that song we performed is a song called Getting My Love that's come out since, but it wasn't out at the time.
Oh, okay.
So we performed it, but then there was 70,000 people singing a song, unreleased
song.
Oh,
shit, it hadn't even come out yet.
No, we released it like 2 months later. It's just like, it's an easy song to sing and it's 4 words.
Yeah.
But it was like this amazing feeling of, we hadn't released music in a year and we were playing a new song and they were all shouting it back for like 2 minutes straight after the song ended, which was like, it was an incredible feeling. So we've headlined Electric Picnic twice, and that is always kind of the first thing that pops into my mind for a career highlight. And I think we did 5 nights at the Tree Arena back in 2019 in Ireland, and we were the first band ever to do that. So they're the two that jump out to me. Any for you? The RDS as well?
Yeah, for me actually it's not gigs. I would say releasing our own album and producing music for me in general, and hearing it on the radio that was a huge highlight for me. I just love that side of things, and just never thought I'd be in a band that could do that kind of stuff, and to be producing our own music, and it's just all that kind of stuff is just dream come true kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Was there ever any like imposter syndrome around the production, or have you just always felt just ready for it? Because I think dipped my toe into it a bit and had a few releases, but every time I just felt really self-critical, like more so than I do towards my guitar playing, for example.
I'm not sure. I don't think I have that. I think I'm sure I have had it. I think I'm confident in what I do, but there is always that element of it's not as good as what's out already.
Yeah.
And now you're constantly chasing, which I think might be a healthy thing, that I think we are as a band constantly chasing to be something better.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking that we have it, you know. So I do feel that.
Yeah.
I guess.
I think that's a good place to be, like, you know.
I hope so.
And you know, you mentioned before about, like, the hustle and, like, playing those, you know, writing songs on the road, like, you're not just, like, laid back, allowing.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly. And it's not, like, we are not laid back in general. Like, we are always busy. Like, it's hard work, and it's what we want to be doing. And you guys know it's time consuming, it's hard work. There's no set time, but you love it.
Yeah,
and that's why you do it. The reward is better than anything I've ever had in my life, so it's worth it.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely. And you say about like hearing yourself on the radio. Yeah, there's no better feeling.
It's like
you know, of all the bands and all the artists, whatever. Like for that 3.5 minutes, like it's all you. It's all
exactly.
It's so sick.
And having like family be proud
of
you and actually really supporting you for it. It's amazing.
Yeah. My when was the first time we were on Radio 1, my dad told me that he was like driving through, he just happened to be, I don't know if he happened to be or he planned it, like driving through like our town, and he literally had like the windows down, like full blast, being just shouting out the window, this is my son. Like that idea is like so, like, yeah,
that's amazing. What it's all about. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's stuff you remember forever.
Exactly. Yeah,
you know. Yeah,
he's gonna listen to this as well, like, he's gonna love that. Shout out.
Okay, do you guys have any touring top tips or things you couldn't live without whilst on the road?
Oh yeah, lots.
Yeah.
Well, toothbrush, toothpaste, enough underwear, enough socks, I would say as well.
Why are you laughing? Shampoo.
So the basic hygiene.
There's a lot of things that you forget. Basic hygiene. Time management, I think, is the biggest one.
Mm-hmm.
Be ready to manage your time properly.
Yeah. For me, I bring a hot water bottle because I hate being cold, and the tour bus can be cold. So I always make sure I have a hot water bottle because I just think I like to stay warm. especially for like my vocal, I don't want it to ever get, because like I was saying earlier, I was sick on the whole tour. Thankfully my vocal was fine, but I just like to have that as like a safety blanket. Actually, the tour before this, I brought an electric blanket and plugged that into my bunker. That was really? That was great.
That's a great hack right there.
Yeah, it was actually, I don't know why I didn't do that this time. But that was great. That was a lifesaver for me. And then we always have a PlayStation on the bus, play FIFA. That's good for like downtime when you're not doing music stuff. It's good to like go and do something like mundane like that. But I think we're pretty like easygoing anyway, aren't we? We don't have a lot of demands or a lot of needs. Just like,
yeah, in a way, I think there's two ways of looking at going on tour. You either lean into it 100% and you really go on tour, you know, or you, for me, I think what's better is to kind of separate yourself from it and still try and keep a routine, normal life, try and get up early, try and eat at the right times. Like, the biggest shock for me when you first start touring is how little time you have to sleep and eat, and how much time they actually take up, eating and sleeping.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that shit together, your whole day is ruined.
Yeah. Like, you always try and like work out and stuff, don't you? And
yeah, especially on this last run, I was like I put more effort into being healthy than I have done on previous tours, and I was like running and eating well, and I just felt so much better for it.
Yeah,
it
makes a big difference.
I say I came home and felt good, but I got ill, but throughout the tour I felt great, especially better sleep and just better emotions as well, I think.
It's a draining time physically and emotionally. You really have to be prepared.
It's quite tricky to eat well on some of those longer drives when you're just stopping at some of those German services, and it's like a sausage or nothing.
So
really.
True. Yeah, so true. Yeah. It is tough, but I think making the effort does make, because this, for me, this has been the healthiest I've been on this tour, and it does make a huge difference. And even just prepping for the tour, I was working out all the time, getting ready to make sure I could be super fit. And it makes such a difference, even though I was ill for the whole fucking tour as well.
You mentioned about underwear. The reason I laugh, literally before this last tour that we've just been on, I treated myself to, I literally realized that all the boxes that I had were just like old, like tight boxes. I was like, I can't live like this. Like, this isn't enough. So I literally went all out and I got, did I get 19 pairs of, or did I get 11 pairs? 11 pairs of like fresh, you know, like crisp, like Calvin Klein. Like, I went all out. They're fucking expensive. And I literally went all out. It was great. Literally, the first show that we were playing was... and also, side note, I've just had a child, just had a daughter. And she, when we were going on tour, she was like 2 weeks old, and we were away for two weeks. Someone had told me, as like, you know, if you get, you know, homesick, and, you know, if you miss your daughter or whatever, you should bring a baby grow, like a sleep suit, like a used sleep suit that kind of smells of her.
Yeah.
And then, like, if you get lonely or whatever, and you can smell it and mind it. Okay, I was like, cool. So I put it in like a Ziploc bag. Basically all of our equipment was driven. So the first show was in Zurich. So all of our equipment was like driven there. So like all of our suitcase and everything. And then we flew in to Zurich.
Right.
And literally in my backpack, all I had was 11 pairs of fresh boxers and a little used baby grow in a Ziploc bag.
Wow.
And I was like, if I get pulled over by security and they're gonna like open my bag, I'm not gonna let it Switzerland. I was just like, fuck. Literally, that's all I had was like these fresh boxes and the baby girl. But luckily, I wasn't stopped and all was good.
Good, you survived.
Yeah,
that's funny, man.
Cool. Okay, moving on to your rider. Are there any diva requests, or is it a fairly standard, or
so standard?
We are so boring.
Yeah.
We have nothing.
Actually,
on our rider.
We don't have. We have a no alcohol rider.
Oh, really?
We don't drink when we play. We've never even touched a drop of alcohol before playing a show. That's just something we decided at the beginning of the band.
Yeah.
But that, you wouldn't believe how many heads that turns when we get into a venue. They always come in and they're like, I think there might be a mistake on your rider. There's like no alcohol. And we're like, no, we don't want any alcohol on our rider.
They still give you beer anyway.
They always try and bring it in.
They're like, crates.
We don't want it.
Because they've paid for it. Like, you have to use it. Like, we didn't ask for it.
Yeah. We're the same with nuts. We're like, at the top of our rider, it's like, no nuts. And times out of 10, they'll put on like a cereal bar and it'll be like, Nature Valley Nutty Supreme or something.
Really?
You're like, are you kidding me? Every venue.
Yeah, it really was every venue.
Really?
That last tour.
Oh no. Yeah, we used to get like framed photos just because we were told early on put something specific in the rider and
so they read
the whole thing. I used to get a framed photo of Rod Stewart. You had a framed photo of
Noel Edmonds. My mum used to watch Deal or No Deal.
Yeah.
And don't know why I just wanted him there.
It was a good one. There's a lot of blonde men on the wall.
And
grey hair.
How often would that actually turn up?
Every time.
Oh, really?
Every time.
Yeah.
Just Rod and Noel just next to each other just chilling
out. Exactly. And then we had to get rid of it because they copped onto us.
They started reusing photos.
Yeah,
and
it was
stuff.
Like, come on, we've seen this photo already. We need a new one.
Yeah. And then we just had loads of framed photos of Rod Stewart and Noel Edmonds and we were like, let's stop doing this because we need to just fucking get rid of this.
I looked like a hoarder.
It got weird.
Yeah, because I got them at home to my parents' house and it was just weird seeing like 10 photos of Noel Edmonds and 5 of them were the same photo.
But he looked incredible in his photo.
He did. I'd
be like, Google images, like first one. Just
exactly.
Like,
exactly. It was that. I was like, a bit more effort.
Yeah.
I want to go down, scroll down a little bit.
Maybe we should go more niche.
Yeah. we were talking to we had Woody from Bastille on a previous episode and he had a similar one, but he had he would request, or they would request, that famous person was in bed with a member of Bastille.
Oh wow.
So it'd be like we want I don't know, Donald Trump in bed with Dan or whatever,
right? Yeah.
And yeah, they basically had all these like pictures of them in bed with someone famous. Yeah, it's wow. Like Liza Minnelli and
Pavarotti or something.
Yeah, Pavarotti. Yeah,
that's a good one.
Totally unnecessary, but
rock and roll.
You should know the care, yeah.
Rock and roll. Jokes. So do you guys remember the turning point that you guys that you kind of thought that this band might be going somewhere, that you know things were kind of going in the right direction? There's a moment
I remember we had released a song, our first song, and then we had released a couple more songs, but we were popular on social media in our local area and there was definitely something happening. But then last minute we were asked to fill in basically a band had dropped out of a radio show at the national radio station and they needed a band quick, and we were like, we'll do it from our management, and we drove my parents' car. Me and Ryan drove down with acoustic guitars to Clonmel, which is a town in the south of Ireland, outside a Lidl car park, you know, that's where the Roadcaster radio thing was set up, and we went in and we played our song, our single, and the radio presenter didn't even look us in the eye, was not interested, it was just busy, like, oh, just play your song. And I'll never forget, we started playing it and the presenter just looked up, stopped what he was doing and was really interested in us all of a sudden and wanted to talk to us and got lots of requests, and they ended up playing the recorded version again. And then I remember we were driving home on the motorway and I actually had to pull in off the motorway because we went number one within maybe 15 minutes.
Oh, well, from that?
From that. Wow, our song went number one in the country instantly everywhere. iTunes, you know, airplay was going. It was shooting up straight away. Everyone was playing it. That was an insane moment of like, oh, wow, we are number one all of a sudden.
And things just like kind of coming together. Like,
yeah,
you know.
But it was a moment. Like before that day, we were steadily climbing, but it just changed the game. The minute our song was on radio, that was it, over. Yeah. And yeah, super thankful.
Sick.
It was amazing. Crazy. Yeah, that it wasn't actually originally your opportunity, but you were ready and it was good enough to go. And
that's the thing. You got to be ready. And you know.
I'll never forget. Just being, remember that, packed up on the side of a motorway in my parents' car, being like, "What is going on? Like, this was not planned." You know, just. Yeah. And all of a sudden there was just offers coming left, right and centre for everything.
It
was just mad time.
Cool. So this brings us to the last section. This is the quick fire round.
Ooh.
So basically it's really simple. It's the first thing that comes to mind. So if we were to say dogs, you were to say cats.
Sure.
You can elaborate on your answer, or you can literally just say the one word answer. It's totally up to you.
Sounds good.
So again, kind of continue on from the last one. When we say take my hand, you say
life changing.
I was going to say, and we could go walking.
Oh, you're going to finish the lyric.
Finish the lyric.
That, yeah. I mean, that song has become like a battle cry in Ireland where some lad walks into a pub and says, take my hand. And then the whole pub starts singing it.
How sick. Wow,
which is cool. And a lad actually did it last night. We were going to, did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard it.
We were about to perform Get On My Love. And it was like, I was waiting for like the count in my ears. And I could just hear the guy shout, take my hand. I was like, this, it's the wrong song. It's going to be after. Yeah.
Okay, when we say RCA Records, you say?
I say radio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say like new life, because we just signed with RCA. We were a previous label before, and it feels like we're a new band again since signing with them, and they've been super supportive and really believe in us, so they've been really good. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, I'm not sure I'm going to get the pronunciation on this, but when we say athai,
you pronounce that so well.
Perfectly. That was perfect. Pronounced. Thanks very much. Sure. Anyway, sorry.
I'm sorry.
Because no, people never pronounce it right, but that was spot on.
Look at here. I've literally written the athai.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Because people always say athi and all that kind of stuff, but that was perfect.
Say it again.
Athai.
Home. Yeah, I was going to say the same as well. Home and...
But we have a more interesting answer for that, maybe. It's a unique town. Mm-hmm. And it's haven.
Yeah. I would say mad. When I think of a Thai, I just think of just fucking nutcases.
Oh, really? I was going to say, would you recommend a visit, or is it not?
No.
Unless no, you're from there, yeah.
I would. I just think of the people. Anytime I think of a Thai, I just think of the fucking nutcases I grew up with. And just the environment that I grew up in personally. Me and Jimmy had very different experiences. Athai is a tiny town, like 10,000 people. But we've very vastly different experiences. Jimmy grew up in the countryside and I grew up in the town. And I just grew up on the streets with a lot of nutcases, getting into trouble and all that. And then yours was a lot more music and art. And
Yeah, it's different. But like, I guess when you're in a small town, it's an ecosystem. Within itself. And you think that that it's unique, then there's 100,000 of those in Ireland, you know, and it's we're just one of them. But it's home for us.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're not here to defend themselves, so you got free rein here, but when we say Owen and Cliff
just the first thing. What's the first thing that goes into your head?
I'm trying to think of something here.
Separately or together?
We'll go separate. We'll go Owen first.
I would say...
It can be just one word.
I'm going to say, because you grew up with Owen, so you'll have a different answer. But I'm going to say the word vital.
Okay.
And I think he's vital to the band, because he is the comic relief. I think if we had somebody else, and it was me, Jimmy, and Cliff, and somebody else, I think we would go crazy a lot quicker than we do with Owen, because Owen's like a performing monkey. Mm-hmm. You need Owen to do something and get like something going. Owen is the person that you do it.
That's kind of like Huss for us, isn't it?
Huss is that guy for us.
Right, yeah. You need it. Yeah. You need it in a band. Yeah. What would you say for Owen?
I'd say reliable.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's just rock solid. He can do anything as well. He's, you know, he's an engineer, trained engineer. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
Aircraft engineer.
An aircraft engineer.
Yeah. He's very intelligent, so he can fix anything and do anything. So he's good to have.
That's good.
And drive anything.
Yeah.
And then Cliff.
I'm lovable. Cliff is just so instantly lovable. It's crazy.
And vital though, right?
And not as vital as Owen. No, Cliff is just, everybody loves him. Like, as soon as you meet him, I know even for me, when I first met him, that's how Cliff ended up in the band, because Jimmy knew Cliff for years, and we were actually doing band like auditions for a guitarist and a bass player in Cliff's like studio that he has at his house. And I went there, and I find it hard to click with people sometimes. I'm a bit more reserved and I'm not very outgoing. But when I met Cliff, I was just like, I fucking love this guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I remember we had left the auditions and they went terribly, the people who came to play. And I just said to Jimmy on the way out, I was like, can Cliff play any instrument? And if so, can he be in the band? And then Jimmy was like, yeah, he can play literally anything. And he would be great as the bass player in the band. But it was just that thing where I just instantly loved him. And we see it all the time. He's always the first person that people come up to. And he's just that guy.
Personable.
Yeah.
That's good.
We actually started to call Huss Cliff for a while. Really? Because he was so edgy. We had to wear tartan and trousers and we were like, come on.
Someone came up to her the other day and was like, oh my God, you're just a golden retriever.
Yeah.
To us. Because he's just like a lovable.
That's
sort
exactly
of like,
Cliff as well, yeah. Yeah. That's a good way of describing him.
Yeah, he's like a dog, actually. Cliff is a dog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That cartoon, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The big red dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. And literally when they said that, it was like, why have we never thought that before?
Yeah,
why
I just had that exact thought there when you said it. I was like, how have we never called Cliff that before?
Yeah,
that's literally what he is.
That's good. Okay, when we say get on my
love train, baby.
That's get on my love train, baby.
That's what we said in the studio when we were writing it all the time as a joke. We wrote that with two guys in Sweden, Robin and Johan. They're great producer writers. And they... Do you know what was amazing about that was Johan actually said the phrase get on my love because English is not his first language, so like we never would have said that because it just doesn't really make grammatical sense.
Yeah,
but it's just like a feeling.
They're the best. Yeah.
So I love that about that.
Do you know what's funny? You can't translate that. Oh, we tried to translate it into German and it was like nearly a conference meeting of how do we translate this into German. You just can't.
Yeah, we were asking on our video shoot for the song, we were asking the extras like how do you say it in German. They were like,
you can't.
Like
nine.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Okay, and to round things off, when we say picture this, you say?
Personally, life-changing. And then for everyone else, I would say, at picture this, go follow us, please. And I hope you like our music.
Yeah, I would say purpose, I think. Get a lot of purpose in picture this that I don't think I had before.
Love that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Is there anything else before we round things off that you want to mention? Obviously, your album's coming out later in the year.
Yeah, album comes out in September, Parked Car Conversations. What date?
September 29th. And then we're going on tour in October, November, around the UK and Ireland and Europe as well. So that's on sale right now. There's limited tickets available for the UK. I do know that. So, I hope people can come and enjoy it, and you know we're just finishing the album, and yeah, it's gonna be a good year, I hope.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Nice one. Thank you again so much for being here.
Of course.
Here.
Thank you very much for the time.
Cheers, guys. Good to meet you both.
Yeah, good to hear some stories as well from you guys. Yeah. And we are not alone.
And we'll see you. We'll see you out on a hotel bar somewhere in Europe. I'm
sure. Hope so.
Absolutely.
Nice one. All right,
guys. Cool. A huge thanks to Picture This, to Jimmy and to Ryan for being part of the podcast and for turning up the morning after their big London show, fresh and ready to go. They were such pros, and also a big thanks to the Camden Enterprise Hotel for being so accommodating.
We couldn't do this podcast without you guys listening, so huge thanks to you for being part of the Floors family. And if you do like your hair, if you do like your hair, if you do like what you hear, then please let us know. There's nothing better than getting a little DM or a message saying how much you enjoyed a certain story and how our sultry tones helped bring to life an otherwise long and boring morning commute for you.
Make sure you like, comment and subscribe anywhere and everywhere you can. It's all about that algorithm. You can find us at most places at Meet at the Hotel Bar or meetatthehotelbar.com. It really does make so much difference for us, an independent podcast, in trying to climb those big bad podcast charts.
Join us next time when we'll be chatting to Andy from Razorlight. You can expect stories of what it's like to be in a band with David Brent, being victims of an accidental assassination attempt while returning home from a show in Russia.
What?
I know. And how to deal with a drunk bassist who refuses to play anything other than Come As You Are by Nirvana whilst playing main stage at the Isle of Wight Festival. Only on...